Welcome to Courageous Conversations with your host, Richard Dolan, a world-renowned speaker, mentor, and coach to many celebrity icons and global thought leaders. Listen as they share their stories and insights about what it takes to lead a courageous life, from overcoming adversity to living with purpose and meaning. Each guest brings a unique perspective that will leave you feeling empowered and motivated to make positive changes in your own life starting today.
It's Richard Dolan here for a courageous conversation with Nate May, not just May Day, but Mr. Robinson. So before we get started, I want everyone to know that this is how the conversation goes. These are courageous conversations. For context, as you all know, we started this at the beginning of the pandemic. We recognized and understood that people were quarantined on their own and lonely. And so we launched the courageous conversation to just find out what people were doing to survive and get by intact and whole and complete by the end of the week. Well, this carried through the entire 13 months or so of this thing we've come to call a crisis, an upset, a global pandemic, and it's kept people connected. I want to thank Bronze Studios for being one of the biggest partners that I have in all things legacy. As a partner in Bronze Studios and the head of Bronze Legacy, I want you to know that Nate Robinson's not just a NBA star. He's not just a slam dunk champion. He's not just a writer and an author. He's not just a celebrity and a boxer. He's also a father and a leader. He's a God-fearing man, and he's just getting started. And my interest in Nate really began with understanding that he has a story to tell. He has a place that he's come from. He's been able to, in fact, exceed one's expectations and to, in fact, do the unimaginable. And we're going to get started with him today. So for all of you here, just so you know, especially my writing team from Braun, there's a story to tell. It needs to find its way on the silver screen. It needs to find its way through Netflix, Apple, Prime, and or any other streaming service in the world, all of which we're connected to. But this is the first place we'll get to find out, discover, understand, and hear from himself right now. My good friend, I want to welcome here. Let's give him a warm welcome. What's up, Nate? Good to see you, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Listen, every time we talk, and you always traveling all over the place. Kids are busy. Your boy's doing well. Talk to us. How's it being a dad, and what's going on in the family? What are you guys winning? What are you guys championing? What are you guys crushing right now? What's going on?
Oh, man. Family's been good. They're in sports. They're in school, of course. My daughter just started, playing AAU basketball, travel basketball. And, she wants to be one of the best, greatest basketball players ever to walk the earth. So
you're all in sports. You're all
going. Yeah, me and dad just having these guys trying to, keep them in the gym, keep them focused on the prize, and just keeping them, ready in there and focused.
Now, do you find, Nate, that given that you're a seasoned veteran NBA player, obviously a world-class athlete, do you find that that helps you or hurts you as a dad and as an athlete when really supporting your kids in the world of sport?
It's a little bit of both. I'm not gonna lie, because one, what I fear is, handing my daughter to a program or a coach that may not know as much basketball as I know, or what I want my children to know, and what I want them to take in. Because kids are sponges; they learn really fast, and especially when they love something. When they're having fun, with their friends, and it's a high competitive game with sports in general. So for me, I try to sit back and just be a fan and let them learn their way, like how I did when I grew up, because I knew all my coaches growing up didn't know everything, and I know how hard my dad was on me and making sure that he gave me the tools that I needed to be successful as a young kid growing up, trying to fulfill my dreams as and make it to the NBA. So I have the same dreams and expectations for them. I just want the best for them, and I want them to enjoy it. I think if they enjoy it, they'll find their own path. They'll find their own love for the game, like I did. As much as I want them to do it a certain way, I want them to figure it out for themselves as well.
Now, from one dad to another, and I've got a son who also too is competitive. Do you find that we've grown soft while our dads of yesterday kicked our ass?
Yeah.
You think do you think you're soft?
Yeah. But I try to, one thing I try to do is, I tell my kids all the time, if you're going to do it right. And give it your best ability and give it your all. If you can do that, then I'm cool with that. And they do a good job of, stepping up to the plate and, do what I ask.
So what do you do when they fail or when they falter, when they don't show up, when they're not putting in their all? How do you address them as both father, fan, but also trainer and mentor?
I just keep challenging them. If it's something that if they filmed it or we can watch, I get them to watch film on themselves. I tell them that's the best way to learn from your mistakes is, watching it, seeing it, and then go do it again and try it again. And just repetitions, man, they need more reps. Once they have more reps and they can learn from their mistakes. Right now, they're at an early stage in their career as in sports wise right now, they have so much time on their hands as in getting better and, learning, every day, each day, each time they go off to practice. And I just tell them small victories. I tell my kids a challenge. Each of the teammates, when they go to practice, try to be first one in the line, try not to miss a shot, try to make everything, try to switch and just try to be the best on the court at all times and challenge yourself and challenge your teammates and make you better.
Now, I know, listen, folks, if you're just tuning in, I know we've got lots of friends and fans. Put some love in there to the chat room. Let Nate know who you are, where you're coming from. If you're just joining here, good to see you, Maria and C-Rock, Christian and Daniela. Good to see Dominique and of course, Jan. But hey, listen, you brought up the court, the hardwood. And I mean, you were one of the most unconventional players on the field. Aside from pivots, the way you attack the paint, the way you come up for rebounds and such. But let's just talk about it, because amongst men, we don't often talk about size. But size is your prize. I mean, you may be small and considerably, as you've called yourself, short, but you have been mighty. What was that like? Heading into the NBA, and people must likely look at you and say, are you kidding? Like Spud Webb was probably a phenomenon, a freak of nature, a miracle. He got in here somehow. But following through, and of course, given the way he paved it, what was that like for you coming through and up into the NBA, given the height you've got?
As a kid, I think, my dad always taught me that, height shouldn't be a problem for you because everybody's always going to be taller than you. So it's something that I was already used to, if that makes sense. The taller a person was, it was like, all right, as me being like David and, all these guys being Goliath, if I outwork and out and me as a person outdo the taller guy, it just looks way better. It just looks like, wow, this little guy is bringing out, passion and excitement every time he steps on the floor. And that's what I try to bring every time that I went up against whoever it was. If you're 1 inch taller or 20 inches taller, it didn't matter. I just wanted them to, one, respect my game and, what I brought to the table, how hard I worked. And I love to win and I love to compete. And whoever was on the court that day is just, it sucks to be you because I was coming after you. It didn't matter who you were, what name you had behind you. I just wanted to, let them know and, let my game do the talking and you see what you get.
Well, here's the thing about you is that people don't have to go too far. They just have to Google you to find out what your age is, what your height is, what your tenure has been. But listen, for me as a dad today, I know that the kids today are told you can do anything you put your mind to. That wasn't the case when I was growing up, when we were growing up. Right. So what was the moment for you when you thought to yourself, I might be this size. And of course the natural height at the time of that game was 6'8". That was the average. And you were well below that average. Did you have an aha moment, Nate? Like, did you say, this is it? I want to be a baller. When did that happen for you?
Honestly, when I was like 10 years old, I kind of knew what I wanted to do. I mean, I wanted to, it's funny, when I was a kid, I set my goals so high and I wanted to be the first three sport athlete that, made a professional basketball, football, and I wanted to run track. And I knew as I got older, I saw like, all right, that's not going to happen. all the sports, they all collide. They all come, they cross each other. And I was like, I want to play the sport that people, don't believe that I have a chance of making. Football came kind of easy. Basketball, they were like, yeah, we don't believe that you can make it. You know, you're too short. You're not fast enough. You're not strong enough. You're not smart enough. The game is just, you know, it's a big man's game. And I was like, that's it. That's the sport I want to play. I want to play the sport that they think I won't succeed in. And, you know, God gave me the opportunity to showcase what I can do. He gave me the abilities to do what I, you know, to go out and perform. And it was up to me to maintain that and work hard and, keep the talent level at a high level at all times. And I think over time, I just kept getting better each year. I added something new to my game. And then, you know, whenever you compete with your friends and, you know, with your and your I'll say coworkers, since the guys in the NBA, we call themselves, we call ourselves a brotherhood, and they're coworkers. But, you know, we try to compete. We want that one up on, you know, your friend. You know, when it's always cool, it's always fun to, you know, say, oh yeah, I won, or I outdid you on that one. And that's just, you know, being competitive, the competitive nature. You just want to win no matter what it is. And I just think that, you know, I had that chip on my shoulder, and I didn't let anybody, you know, tell me anything different. And I just wanted to prove them wrong.
Well, it's interesting that you should say that, because, you know, from 2005, when you first started in the league with the New York Knicks, and, you know, heading off to Boston Celtics and OKC and then off to Golden State Warriors, I'll stop there at that franchise, because you can't help but think of the Splash Brothers and what Steph Curry and those boys have been able to pull off as 3-point mercenaries. The time in which you played, the game was different. It wasn't sort of an attack from outside the paint and just shoot from sort of the hip. It was always be in the paint. So it was a very aggressive game back in that time. So when you talk about the chip to be competitive, what was the chip for you? If you were to define it, what was the chip on your shoulder that really fueled your way through that paint every single game for over 10 years?
In the NBA. I would say that I just wanted them to respect who I was as a player and not them look at my height as being a deficiency. I just wanted them to see that it didn't matter if you were tall or short, you can play. If you have passion, you had the talent, you had the will, and I checked all those boxes. And, you know, when you're playing in the league, you got to add something to your game every year. Not just every game, but every year you come in, you got to add something new to your game. And like you said, when back then, you know, Iverson was the guy that was coming in, getting to the basket, shooting mid-range jumpers. He wasn't really shooting that many threes like that. Then you start seeing the wave come with Curry and Clay and different guys where the point guard of the team can shoot from, you know, damn near half court. So it's like, all right, now it's time to up your game, and you gotta have a jump shot. So you just kind of add, and you just try to see where the wave is going, and you got to try to add that to your game, because you want to stay relevant. You want to stay, you know, with everybody else and let them know, like, you know, I can add this to my game as well and not, you know, get washed away at sea, you know, with the guys that, you know, can shoot from deep and that can still have a mid-range and, you know, have a complete game. You kind of add different aspects to your game to make it complete.
So as you were continuing to really get a complete game, to bring something new every single time you came to the court, and you were definitely one that was always known for energy. Again, may have been your rebounds, may have been your alley-oops. But did you ever have down times during your tenure? I mean, when you look at your history, sure, you were 10 years in the league, like the NBA, but you played right through till about 2018 in the overseas leagues. Were there dark times? And if so, Nate, how did you get through it?
Dark times, yes, of course. Dark times were tough when you want to play a game that you love, and sometimes your coach, you know, they don't rock with you. They don't like you for whatever reason. That was tough for me to deal with growing up, you know, coming from Seattle, starting every game of your whole high school, literally high school and probably college career. And then you come to the league and, you know, you got to sit the bench. You got to wait. You got to wait your turn. You got to be patient. That's difficult. It's hard, you know, coming in the game, not knowing when you're going to play because your coach is going a different route. He wants to play a different player. And, you know, that happens. And for me, what I decided to do was lose myself within the game. I just wanted to lose myself with getting better. And I just decided to just work on my game even when I wasn't with my team. So when I was, you know, we had practice during the day, probably 10 in the morning, a couple hours. After I was done, I would go to the New York Sports Club or wherever I would go and find more, you know, more time to play, more time to get reps, more time to polish my game. And I think that's what kept me in the league for so long, because I was always ready. You know, I was always a step ahead. You know, I didn't slouch and pout like, oh, my coach don't play me, or I don't get enough minutes, so let me not do anything. I wanted to be ahead of the game. I wanted to make sure that I was always ready. My dad always told me, no, you got to stay ready so you don't have to get ready. And I just ran with that. And it was so cool knowing that I was doing so much extra work outside of the team that I was on. Whenever I got an opportunity to play, I just, you know, brought my energy, and whatever else happens, happens. And I just played to win. And, you know, I played for the crowd. I played for that little kid that came to the game for the first time and never seen the Knicks play. I wanted them to leave with, wow, who is that kid? I want to come back and watch the Knicks again because, you know, oh, that kid, Nate Robinson, you know, shook my hand and dove in the crowd and knocked popcorn on me. Like, they want that experience. And I wanted to give them all of that.
And you did. I did. You did. If you look into the chat room, I'm sure that you have. But I mean, there's a number of people here who remember you, who idolized you, who looked up to you. But as we continue this conversation with Nate Robbins here, I mean, what I want to know is that what kind of adjustments did you have to make as a professional, though? Were there friends you had to cut loose? Was there changes to your environment you needed to make? Were there things that you grew up with and needed to let loose?
I mean, I would say my whole hood that I grew up, you know, I grew up in Seattle, Washington. A lot of my friends that, you know, went a different route that I easily could have went down that same path. But I knew my goals and I knew what I wanted for myself. And it's funny because Snoop Dogg said something not too long ago about your friends. You know, you can't take all your friends with you. You know, sometimes you got to, you know, kind of cut the excess fat from your life, you know, not just, you know, shed weight from your, you know, your real body, but just sometimes the best way to, you know, to cut the fat that you don't need in your life is, you know, to outgrow some of the people that you used to grow up with that's, you know, not moving or not doing anything with their lives. You got to kind of grow up and grow out, you know, kind of like a flower. You know, you kind of got to blossom into something, you know, so beautiful, and kind of got to go through the ugly stages to get there. And you can't be afraid. And a lot of people get caught up and stand in the comfort zone, and you got to kind of look it in the face and, you know, step outside your comfort zone. And sometimes on that other side of that comfort zone is a beautiful, beautiful life. And you just got to take that risk sometimes, take that jump.
Well, speaking of risk and jumps, Nate Robinson, here's the thing about you. You still full of surprises. I mean, for those who are here and for those who are making note, especially for the work that we're doing, there's plenty of stuff that's in store for you with Nate Robinson, his story, curating his story, finding a new purpose, maybe in search of the next Nate Robinson, looking for the next impossible factor to hit the hardwood. More on that soon. What started the conversation about coming out of retirement? Although I know you're a part of the Big Three, Ice Cube's league. I know that you've been, and that's how I met you. I know that you've been very active still, yet coaching and advising and being an ambassador for the sport. But can we talk about boxing for a moment? Can we talk about what got you even remotely connected to the idea of entering the ring? Because you weren't a returning athlete going to a sport you've already been in. You actually are a retired athlete coming into a sport you never actually, in fact, engaged in.
Never again. I mean, not never again, but never. I never thought that I would ever be jumping into the ring after playing years of basketball. Once I've been a fan of boxing my whole life, my dad, big time fan of boxing, but I wanted to do something, like I said, jump outside my comfort zone. I wanted to do something that people thought it was impossible for me to do. And, you know, when I said I was going to do it, I got in the ring and I practiced. And when I tell you, like, boxing was probably, like, the training was one of the hardest things I ever did in my life. And I don't think I've ever wanted to quit anything in my life. Boxing had me on the edge of, like, all right, I don't want to do this no more. All the running, all the stuff. But I was like, it's molding me becoming somebody that I didn't ever think that I could be because of the hard work that you have to put into it. Like, big time respect to all the boxers that are out there because of all the training that you have to do mentally. You got to be focused. it's really, really crazy. Like, you got to be somewhat crazy to try it. So I was like, you know what? I'm crazy enough to get in the ring and try something I've never, you know, I've never done, and people already doubted me. Cool. Let me get in here and see it. Like, even though the outcome wasn't what I wanted it, you know, it's something that I know for sure that I'm going to do again, because, you know, I want to show people that you can't be afraid to do something of the unknown. Mm-hmm. You can't be afraid to get out. And then to deal with everything afterwards, you got to stand up and look it in the face and accept it. Accept everything that comes with everything that you tried to do. So for me, it was something that I always wanted to try. And I mean, it looked, like you said, it looks fun. It looks crazy. Like, you got to be somewhat crazy to try. And I did. And I am that. And I'm going to get back in the ring and do it again, because I'm nuts. And I just, you know, I really want to show people, you know, what it's like, one, to try something, to fail, to get back up and try again. Because you don't just stop doing something because you weren't successful at the first time. You get up and you try it again, and you try it again. You keep going until you get the results you want. And that's how I am as a person. That's how I am as an athlete. And I've never, you know, quit anything a day in my life. So I'm going to continue to keep doing and keep fighting.
Well, I love that. I mean, one of your working philosophies in life is to add something new every day.
Every day.
And I bet any money that as you began to wind down your professional career, finding your way into a ring was just another way to add something new to your repertoire of life and living. So what would you notice, aside from the obvious, like cardio and your physiological essence, like you probably got stronger, what else changed about you, Nate? What else do you think that now that you tasted boxing, readying for it, because it's been often said it's not the destination that matters. So we don't even need to talk about how it ended. It's just the person you become pursuing that outcome. What changed that's irreversible for you? Was there a transformation in you? Was there something that got woke in you? What do you feel like you grew with that you never had before because of that experience?
I just think it just made me so much more mentally strong that I didn't think that I had within me. Not just as an athlete, but as a person, as a human being. You know, the fight that I had, I didn't know I had that much fight in me. Like, yeah, and when you're doing something that you love and it's easy in basketball or football or something that you're normally used to doing, but knowing that, you know, you get in the ring and do something that people fear, and, you know, you just get in there, you got to do it. And I did that. And for me, you know, being for boxing, waking me up, being mentally strong, it shows me that I know how to take an L, get up and try again. Some people quit. Some people, you know, not even think twice about doing something like that, especially after what the outcome was. People would just, you know, tuck their tails. Me, never, never. I wouldn't get up, try it again. And I want to show people, like, you can, you know, stand up and, you know, do something that, you know, you're not used to doing. You can find yourself in doing so many different things that you're not used to doing.
And the kids notice that, right? Dad's doing something quite courageous. Dad's doing something.
Yeah, they respect it. They see that. Because it's funny, me and my kids talked about it, and I was like, half of your friends, your dads would never even get in the ring. They wouldn't. They may laugh and joke about it, but I tell them they wouldn't get in the ring with me, regardless of what they want to laugh about and talk about. And one thing I told my kids, it's not always about winning or losing. One thing I'm showing that is that, yeah, I'm the frontline type of guy. I'm that friend that you call, something happening, I'm riding with you. Win, lose, or draw, I'm going to fight, period. And some guys wouldn't even, they'll just concede defeat without even trying.
How did you and the kids reconcile the way the fight went down for you with them? I mean, for those who watched the fight, and we're not here to talk about the fight, but I want to wrap up that conversation where the way you went down could have alarmed a few, especially those who love you. Like for me, I was like, I lost my breath for probably a good few seconds.
Yeah, my daughter, it's funny. Me and my daughter cried. Like, we talked about it. She was really, my boys were, you know, they were sad, but I had to explain to them, you know, it's okay. It happens. You're not going to win everything you do in your life, you know, and you can't be afraid to stand up to the world and show that you can take an L. And that's what I did. Like, it's cool. And then when I get back in there again, and I'm going to show them how hard work looks when you get in there and you get victorious. And if it happens again and I lose again, I'm going to just keep going until I get the victory that I want. Because I want to show them that it's not always just about winning or losing. You have to stand up for something that you believe in. I believe in myself. I bet on myself any day of the week. It doesn't matter.
And yeah, for those who don't know you, though, just to speak on top of you for a moment, you're a young dad. So when you follow your career, you've really performed for the fans and the kids in the stands who may be, you know, height challenged and or vertically challenged. Right. But how much of you now you find gets driven by your kids? Your kids are watching.
Man, always. Everything. It's funny when you have kids. I tell my friends that are just now having kids, I say your motivation changes. Things that you wanted in life and when you were young with no kids, everything changes. And then when you have the kids, oh, your motivation changes because then you're doing stuff for them and not necessarily just yourself. You're learning how to love somebody other than yourself, and you want the best for them and you want them to succeed so much. So for me, I look at it like what I'm doing now, I'm taking the L's and I'm falling for them so they don't have to do it. So they don't have to be afraid to get in the ring or do something that they've never done before. That's what I'm doing. That's what Dad's here for.
You know, as you know, I'm a coach and advisor to Mike Tyson, have been for now 12 years. And I brought you up before I saw you today. I was actually in LA, which is why we missed our first window to meet. Right. And he said, that guy's one crazy motherfucker. That's what he said.
I am.
He said he's scared of you.
Oh, no way.
He's scared of you. Nah. Yeah. I mean, why would you think that the affection rate for you went up as a result of that fight, as a result of what went down in that fight, as a result of you coming out and doing something you've never done before? What would you think is the reason? What's up, Polo?
I don't know what the reason, honestly. I wanted to show people and kids that didn't believe in themselves, that didn't have anybody to believe in, that you can believe in a guy like me that has no fear. I just want the best for individuals that, you know, were told they can't do this, they can't do that. You know, let me be the guy that, you know, that takes the heat, you know, away from, you know, people that say they can't, that other people don't believe in them. So I just want to show them that it's possible.
Well, Nate, let me give you a couple of insights. And for those who are making notes, because we got a lot of creative and powerful people here, let me share with you a couple of things that I found out. I found that you are the perfect metaphor for things that are small but mighty, and therefore you exhibited and demonstrated courage. You demonstrated the ability to believe in self against all odds yet again. You were able to rise to an occasion that was unfamiliar and likely dark for all. And here's the best part. You also entered the ring and exited with the same humility and humbleness that you've always been synonymous with. So win, lose, or draw, you're a class act.
Thank you.
So, no, absolutely. Those aren't, you know, well, those are my words, but I'm repeating what I've heard. So for you, what's going on now for you? What is it that you'd love to do or love to get your hands in, aside from entering the ring again? What are you and Nate, rather you and Polo, I want to say, because Polo's here, I know he is. What are you and Polo really wanting to cook up for Nate 3.0? What's next for you that you'd love to do?
Oh man, besides coaching, I want to create content. I want to be able to highlight and showcase the people that have been let down in their life or put down as in saying that they can't make it. I want to find the next Nate Robinson, Isaiah Thomas. I want to find the next small giant. That's what I want to do. I want to highlight the people that, you know, some people that don't believe in and that they believe in themselves and, you know, they need a little kick push into the world where, you know, you open your eyes, where other people can open their eyes to the little people. And I think that's my niche. I think that's what God put me here on earth to do, is to be an inspiration to people, you know, who always get looked past, looked over. And it's time that, you know, the little people in the world, you know, get some love, man. You know, this it's always, you know, a taller person that always gets the job or gets the promotion or whatever the case may be, man. And that's why I wrote my book, The Heart Over Height, and I stood by that. And you know, a lot of small people in the world are some of the coolest people, and they just get looked past a lot. And I think my job is, you know, to be the one to stand up and bring it to light.
I love that. Hey, by the way, for the people who write me, and if you don't know how to write me, then that's too bad. But for those who know how to write me, for the first 25 people, I'm going to get you a copy of that book. I'm going to take it upon ourselves over at Braun enrich you to make sure that you get a copy. So send me a quick note. Let me know that you want one, and I'll make sure I coordinate with Nate in his office. Polo, I'm sure.
Appreciate it, bro.
No, absolutely. We got to support you. But I love what you're saying. You know, one of my friends today has a show, and it was actually a means to heal his heart for the loss he suffered. His name is Stanley Tucci, a very well-known actor, and he lost his wife in a very tragic way. But in a conversation we had in Vancouver not so long ago, where I said, you know, why don't you come up with an idea on how to heal sooner? And he goes, you know, that's a great idea. And I said, well, why don't you do a show? Where did you love being with your wife the most? And he said, Italy. So there's a show today that airs to this day called Discovering Italy, where he's actually recounting the steps and the memories that is a form of him healing his way. What I'm saying is that we can use the medium of movies and television to really find the next small giant. And it's not about you needing to heal, because I don't think you have any wounds. You're just too damn proud, and you're probably just full of iron to actually, in fact, anyone leave a mark on you. But it sounds like what's going to be cool is that you're a bit of a cross of an Anthony Bourdain. Rather than discovering great cuisine or great chefs and great culture, you're looking for great people through interesting circumstances for them to, in fact, have some light shine on their smallness so they can, in fact, unleash their greatness. Does that resonate with you?
Yes.
Cool. Then that was a short yes. I'll take that, right, Polo? Yes. Hey, listen, Nate, would you take some questions from some of the folks that are around the world here who are keen to connect with you? Cool with that?
Q&A, of course.
Absolutely. Fantastic. All right. Well, listen, folks, if you've got a question for Nate, you know, just be mindful that his time is limited. It is Good Friday. I don't want to keep him from his family or you from yours. If you've got a question, digitally raise your hand. I'll get to you. And that way we can get one in there. I'm going to go up to C-Rock. Just introduce yourself. Let him know where you're from, and we can let you loose. What's up there, Mike?
What's up, Nate? Rich, thank you very much. Great job, Rich, for this interview. Hey, Nate, I'm a big guy on the rocket fuel concept I created, which is to turn all setbacks into rocket fuel for your future, so you become unstoppable. I was watching the boxing match. When was the first moment you felt that you were able to turn that L into a victory at some point? Like after that event, like when was the moment that you said, you know what, this ain't defining me. I'm going to show them.
I mean, probably right after when, you know, I started making memes of myself, when I started laughing at some of the memes because some of them were hella funny. And I have a great sense of humor. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to sit and just be in a pity party of myself, because I've never been that type of guy. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to face the world and, you know, and still understand, like, you know, you win some, you lose some. So in the movie Friday, you know, Pops, you know, shout out to, you know, my Mr. Witherspoon, rest in peace, John Witherspoon. He, you know, in the film, he said, you win some, you lose some, but you live to fight another day. And I've been hearing that since the 90s, you know, since I was a kid. And I'm like, wow. And not knowing, like, quotes like that that are in movies can really touch you in a way. And it just opened my eyes. Like, you know what? Get out there. Still show your face. Still, you know, be proud and prideful, because you've done so much, you know, for so many kids in the world. Like, this one fight and incident is not going to define who you are. You know, stepping into a ring and doing something I've never done before a day in my life and fighting a guy that has, you know, a couple fights under his belt, that this is something that he wanted to do. For me, it just showed courage, it showed heart, and, you know, to go in there and to give him my all. And shout out to Jake Paul, too, as well, because that it's a dangerous sport and it's hard to do. And I know he has a fight coming up, and I wish him nothing but the best. And, you know, for me, I just, you know, I wanted to just capitalize on, you know, for the people, not just for myself, but for people that who have been knocked down, that have trouble getting up and, you know, moving forward. And I just wanted to show them that if I can do it, you can do it.
You know, Nate, great question, Mike. You know, there's been questions that I've had, especially at the studio, talking about your election to choose the colors you did, that you chose to walk into the ring. And for those who don't know, may have not seen the fight or noticed what Nate was wearing, it was quite synonymous with New York Knicks colors.
Yeah, it was Knicks. Everybody thought it was for the Knicks, but it wasn't. So quick story, we'll go back. I went to a Seattle public school called Rainier Beach High School, and I think that we are the best public school in the country. We produced, I think, 7 NBA professional athletes, NBA players, Doug Christie, Jamal Crawford, myself, Terrence Williams, DeJounte Murray, and Kevin Porter Jr. And that's a long list of just public school, not, you know, private where you can recruit. These are kids that are in the inner city, that are in our community, and that made it out of one place. And it's kind of unheard of. So the reason why I wore those colors was I was wanted to represent my high school. We're orange and blue. We're called Rainier Beach Vikings, the Beach Boys. I was just showing love to that. Everybody thought it was Knicks. I mean, I got love for Knicks, of course, but of course, the colors were for my high school, representing for Rainier Beach High School. So that's why.
That makes a lot of sense because, you know, a lot of Boston fans were upset.
I was going to wear the black, you know, like Mike Tyson used to always wear black, but I was like, you know, I want something to represent, you know, where I'm from, being from Seattle. And I think that for me, it was close to my heart to, you know, do something for, you know, the city where I grew up.
No, I mean, if anyone's writing down any notes, as I'm going to come up to Roberto up in New York, is that you've got to pay homage, folks. I don't know if you're making any notes there, but there's one thing I've noticed about Nate, especially in discussions with his team, led by the genius mind of Polo. I mean, he's always paying homage. He's always paying it forward. He's always cognizant to why am I here? How have I been afforded this opportunity? Who must I thank? Who must I acknowledge? Would you not agree with that, Nate?
Oh, big time, man. My dad always told me, you got to humble yourself before the Lord does. And my dad used to always give me little wisdom and, you know, little gifts, you know, growing up, man. And that's something that I really appreciate from my father, you know, just being a great guy and pushing me and keeping me humble, keeping me balanced, you know, giving me a good balance of success and, you know, being from, you know, getting it out the mud, starting from the bottom and rising to the occasion. So shout out to my dad.
Well, as my brother Jake would say, you know, started from the bottom, now you're here. So, God bless your pops, man. God bless your pops. I'm coming up to Roberto and then Vincent. Roberto, why don't you introduce yourself to Nate? Let him know where you're from and ask your question, man.
Nate, Roberto from New York. I am a big basketball fan, even if I really never throw a ball anywhere my entire life. But I do a follow a little bit of your career, your life path. There is something that strikes me about the things that you have been sharing with us today. You as a young dad and at a young age, it's kind of challenging myself as well as I am a father of young kids. By being so busy with your career and then your career has shifted, you retire, you started to go into the boxing game and all of these other things that kind of fulfill your art and your life. How do you manage with such a busy schedule to be so present with your kids? And if they have ever doubt that you were not there for them, how did you respond to that course of action?
I think early in my career when I was with the Knicks, I mean, my kids were with me the whole time. It's just, you know, when we left and went to, you know, different states to play different arenas, you know, they stay home with their mother. And when I was home, I was with them. I just wanted to do everything with my children because I knew someday they're going to be old and they're going to be older. They're going to have their own kids and they're going to leave me. So I just wanted to cherish every moment that I could with them. Take pictures, videos. I wanted to capture every little thing I could with them. So when I'm here and I'm home, I devote my time and everything to them. I have a 16-year-old, a 14-year-old, 11 and 5. And they all want to do something different. They all want to go here, go there. You can't be in two places. So I just try to get them to do and share the same interests. Like they like sports. Okay, cool. I see that. We do things, we go work out, we try to get better. We like to go do things, go go-kart. If they want to go swimming, they want to go do. I just try to do those things and be their friend so they know that, yes, I'm dad. Yes, I'm your best friend. You can come to me and talk to me about anything. I just want their life to be as smooth and easy as possible and get them to understand how much I really, truly love them. And everything else just comes with, you know, being a dad. You learn them, you see their tendencies, you know, you get to see when they're sad and you figure out, you know, how to keep that smile on their face. And you just watch them and you learn them. And I know I'm not a perfect dad, But I know one thing that they will respect and they will, you know, one day learn about me is that everything that I'm doing is for them. It's not for me. And I just can't wait, you know, for them to one day appreciate it. Because now, I mean, they're young kids. They're not going to get it until they have their own kids. When they have their own kids, they'll understand the sacrifices that I made to make sure that they were happy and had everything that they ever dreamed and desired.
That's amazing. Point. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you, Nato. One of the things that I always notice is that Nate's also, you might write this down, is Nate's hands-on. Ain't that right, Bodo? I mean, this guy, you're always hands-on. I mean, I've interviewed, I've been so blessed to be working with such incredible people, you included, with Polo's blessing and many of your teammates. But I mean, but you're hands-on as a dad. Like, you're really in the trenches where a lot of guys and gals are just kind of, they're busy still pursuing their dreams and aspirations. And it's teaching your kids something about parenting. Wouldn't you agree, Nate?
Yeah, I think it is because one, I think I had a great, you know, teacher, which is my parents, because, you know, my dad had 8 kids and I was the oldest of all of them. I'm the oldest. So I kind of had to grow up a little faster than I wanted to. So I really didn't, there's certain things I couldn't do growing up. Like, my mom made sure, yeah, you got to make sure your brother, you know, gets to practice after your practice. You got to make sure you catch the bus. I was catching the bus with my brother and my sisters I was like 11 years old, catching the bus with a 7-year-old, a 9-year-old, a 8, you know, 4, like we were doing it together. And it just, I think that structured me and helped me become the father that I am today. Like today, my daughter has training, basketball training today. She has practice and she has training back to back. And then my son has high school. So I'll go drop her. I'll go take her, watch her practice, go, you know, give her some tips, you know, watch her enjoy herself. Then I'll go to my son's practice, bring my daughter with me, make her, you know, rebound for the high school team. And just, I just keep them, you know, focus on the prize, which is, if this is what you want for your life, this is what you got to do to get it. And I'm showing them the way. It's like I got the blueprint and I got the cheat sheet. So why not follow this? This is what got me to where I'm at, and you can do this and even better. So,
yeah, you got all of that, and you're this close to getting that beautiful Uber emblem for your car.
Oh no! Look, I tell my kids all the time I'm an Uber driver. I said, listen, when you guys make it, just make sure that you guys give me the car that we don't have any more worry about any more miles, because my miles that I put on my car to drive kids from practice to play dates to just everything, man. But for me, it just knows that I want them to understand that they have a friend, they have somebody that they can count on and depend on. And I just want to be there for them. I want to support their dreams. I want to be there, you know, when things are going bad, I want to see how they handle it. I want to see, I want to be there to help them through everything. And like how my parents were for me, just in a different way. And I just want to be, you know, the hands-on. I watched my mom work 3 jobs and still make every game that I've ever played in. And as a little league, in high school, she never missed a game. And to show that much dedication to one child, or all her kids, but to one kid, as in when I was the first one to do it. So I was the oldest. And I was like, you know what? There's no excuses. My mom didn't make not one excuse, never asked for anything. And I was like, you know what? If she can do it, I can do it.
Lionel, man, that's amazing. 8 kids, you know, just to think about it. But hey, by the way, if y'all just not missed it, how many of us can actually say practice and play dates in the same sentence? I mean, from a 6-year-old to a 5-year-old, you got the gamut.
That's
running.
That's a real thing. Dad, I got to go here and play with my friend. Okay, I got practice at 12. It's like, oh God, you got to go to practice, go here, be here. But
you're like, worth it. That's right. You're like, you know, packing a snack pack, but also checking for vodka and breath. Like, you're just doing the two things, you know? Hey, Vincent, you got Nate, man. Go ahead, buddy.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Rich. It's an amazing interview. And Nate, it's a blessing to talk to you.
Thank you. Well, appreciate it.
You know what impresses me is you're a basketball player and you're renowned, and that's awesome. The fact that you went out of your element, did boxing, and the way you approached it, and the way you've taken the result. But what's the most important as a father, I got 2 boys. I treat the boys different, I know, but I got a girl. And when your daughter cries and you were holding her, it's something different about having a daughter and the way you communicate with her. When you guys were having your moment and you know, you're both crying, what did you say to her in that moment? What came out?
Me, honestly, it's funny because I haven't cried in so long, and The minute I saw my daughter's the tears when she called me, because she called, my phone was blown up, and she's the only person that I actually answered. I picked up for, and she called me. She was asking me if I was okay, and I was like, "I'm fine. I'm here. Look, you're looking at me like, you know, Daddy, I'm not dead. I'm good. I'm fine." She was so worried about me, and to have that worry, and knowing that, you know, she cares, and it touched me in a way where I was like, you know what? That's something I want to show my daughter, that it's okay to fall and get back up. I had to be strong for her, because like when I hung that phone up and I wasn't on the phone with her no more, I can just picture how she felt. I can picture how she was going to feel when people, you know, her friends or whoever she talks to back at, you know, school or practices or wherever she's at. And they, you know, they probably make fun of her or whatever, your dad got knocked out or blah, 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 yada, yada, you know. And I also let her know, like, understand that Daddy has done something that nobody in the world has done. 3-time slam dunk champion, made, you know, done something that nobody in the world has ever done. That one person. So you got to hang your head high. And when I told her, you know, when I came home, she, like, I sat in my room for like a week. I just sat there and I, you know, I chilled with her. She was icing my face. She was bringing me whatever I needed. And I was like, you know, I was like, she's like the sweetest person ever. And, you know, I tell my boys, I say, y'all don't love me like Navy loves me. She's my favorite. Like, people say you have kids, don't have a favorite. I say, the hell with that. My daughter is my favorite, and I'm okay with saying it, because she really shows like the real love and the passion and the genuine, you know, she's a sweet soul. And, you know, after we, you know, we cried and we talked about it and we watched the fight, I wanted to show her. Like, I watched it with her, and she was like, Dad, I can't watch it. I said, no, just watch it. Just understand, you know, like, this is us getting over it. When you're watching it, you get over it. You know, you don't hide from it. You stand and you look it right in the face. And that's what I'm glad I got an opportunity to watch it with her and you know, and get past it with her. I think if I didn't have her, I don't think I'd probably get over it, honestly.
Mm. That's beautiful. And the way you just talked about that, it's amazing. And also props to Rich, because next week, Rich Ladies is launching, and it's all about female empowerment. And that's exactly what I have my daughter watching too, and my wife. So props to you for the way you handle that. That's awesome. So thank you.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Vincent. You know, Nate, what's amazing is I want to give you a compliment, because the way your daughter likely is, and I just got a hunch, and you know me, man, I'm just a humble coach, blessed to work with lots of really cool people, but your daughter's likely the carbon copy of your mother.
Facts. That's crazy that you said that, because everything that I see in my daughter, I see in my mother.
Whoa. But what your daughter generates is what you've emanated. So you taught your daughter how to be like your mother, because you likely embody all of the most powerful, strength-filled traits that your mother does. And so your daughter became your mother vicariously through you. That's how you know that.
That's awesome. I can't wait for my daughter to, you know, to really blossom into a beautiful young woman, because she's gonna be a badass. Trust me.
She born from the Robinson stock. She will be badass.
She's a badass.
Tell All right, Yusuf from Stuttgart, Germany. Go ahead. You got Nate. You got the final question, as we got to let Nate get off to his family for these fine holidays.
Awesome. Thank you, Rich. Hey, Nate. How are you, man?
Now, where are you at? Can I join you? Where are you at?
Join me, but we are in a lockdown right here, man. But otherwise, you're welcome to have a beer with me. How are you?
Yeah, where are you, Yusuf? Let him know, because it does look like
I'm
in
Stuttgart, Germany. Yeah.
Look at the background. Look, where are you at? I need to get that green screen behind me so I can make it look like that. That looks cool.
Yeah, and like we'll meet up sometime in a place like this. So I want to get back to boxing again, in life or in sports, you either win or you learn something. And I got a technical question for you. So you said you want to get back in the ring again. Mm-hmm. So you probably have done also some reflection. So what are the things you're going to be working on that you want to use in your next fight?
For me, patience. I watched a fight. Usually when I watch film, basketball, like usually when you get in the game, you don't just get in and just go crazy. You know, like I think I rushed and was too aggressive. I think just sit back, let the first round go, see what the person has, and then, you know, you do your homework you make adjustments. I think that's going to be my biggest thing. I can't wait. I can't wait to get back in the ring and train. I've talked to a couple of people. I talked to Floyd Mayweather. You know, he said he'll do a great job with working with me. He wanted to work with me. So I'm going to be working with the best, and I can't wait. I'm excited. And I just think that, you know, just taking my time and being very patient, I think that I have a way better chance.
Yeah, that's a great answer. Yeah, man, it's composure. And a little advice I can give you, man, like, look into breathing exercises.
Yeah.
Because that's going to keep you calm.
Facts. I had to learn how to breathe. And I was like, you know, when I went to boxing, I was training. That was the hardest thing that I had to learn how to do. Mm-hmm. I was like, man, in basketball, like, I don't even think we breathe the right way. We just, you know, we go, we run, you huff and puff, you get timeouts. There's so many times where you can breathe and you catch your breath. In boxing, you got to learn how to breathe your nose out with your mouth slow. And I had to learn how to, you know, slow your heart rate down. And that was the most difficult thing for me. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. Thank you for your answer.
Thanks, Yusuf. Thanks, Germany. And thank you all. Hey, Nate, you know, I want to give people a bit of a paraphrase as we wind this down, because I'm cognizant of the Holy Week and the fact that people have got families to get to, including you. You've likely got many drives to endure and 5-star ratings to chase. But you know, if you're Nate Robinson, here's what you would say. You know, you got to enjoy the game. You got to find a way to fall in love with the game you play. And you want to make sure you commit yourself to watching the film. You want to make sure that you commit yourself to doing the reps and doing more than you're comfortable. You've got to work harder. You've got to add something new. And every time you bring it, whether it's to a court, the pitch, the rink, or a ring, or just a game of life, you've got to bring something new to your repertoire, because you've got to escape the comfort zone.
Yes.
You've got to, in spite of the W's and in spite of the L's, and for those who are challenged linguistically, that's wins or losses. You ain't gonna, it's not gonna define you. Those wins and losses don't define you. You got to watch it, get over it. But more importantly than anything else, just enjoy the process and have the patience to.
Yes.
Nate, any last closing words you want to share with our friends from around the world as we curate a really great plan for you and Polo to curate your legacy?
Honestly, just, man, enjoy life, guys. We're only here for a short amount of time. That's something that I do know. I see, you know, where the world is going now, from even just technology to pandemics to just how kids are even growing up. You know, enjoy the person that you guys love, that you guys cherish, your friendships. Try to cherish those, because, it's like we're only renting these bodies in our soul. We're only renting them. They're only here for so long. So for me, I would just say for you guys, You can't fly without happy thoughts, guys. My old school Peter Pan. I used to watch Peter Pan as a kid. That quote has carried me, you know, through ups, downs, sideways, all kind of things. So just always remember that. Can't fly without happy thoughts. So make sure everybody stays happy. Make sure you guys fly high.
That's got to be true, Nate, because in closing, you are one of the only human beings I've ever come to know, admire, and call a friend that I get to say can truly fly in mind, fly in soul, fly in body, man. I'm grateful for you. I'm grateful to Polo. I'm grateful to Broad Studios and all that we're doing with you, with all folks here on Rich U. I'm grateful for you, brother. Thanks for trusting me. Thanks for the love. Bless up to you and the family this holiday weekend. Happy Easter to you and yours. God bless mom and dad for building you into the powerhouse you are, because you're a true inspiration for all the people here. I appreciate you.
Have me. God bless everybody. Have a great weekend, guys.
Hey, guys, this has been Nate Robinson, 3-time slam dunk champion, not just an NBA legend, a world heavyweight champion in all things fatherhood, all things human, all things blessed. I want to say thank you so much for being here. We'll debrief later, Nate, both you and I, and along with Polo, of course. But for all of you, thank you so much from my home to your heart, guys. Thank you for being here. God bless. Be safe. And we'll see you again.
All right.
Thanks for tuning into Courageous Conversations with Richard Dolan. We're on all the major podcast platforms, and we appreciate your support by reviewing us. You can follow our show at The Rich World on many social media channels. We hope that listeners like yourself enjoyed this episode. And remember to subscribe via Apple Podcasts or whatever other streaming services are available, because we cannot wait to bring you more valuable content that can make a difference in your life.